is 9 a.m. on May 15th, the Ides of May, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And we have a great show lined up for you, as always.
We sure do.
We got Paces Properties in the house.
That's right.
Yay.
David Cochran, President and CEO, and Merritt Lancaster, Principal and CIO. And, of course, our favorite guest, Dan Williams, who's the Membership Manager for CAP.
Good morning, y'all.
Yeah, and I love when all these C-level people in the house. I better behave this morning. I don't know. I feel like I could get sent to the principal's office or something and get in trouble. Before we get into the news, I said to Elizabeth, I'm going to make all the men in the room uncomfortable right now because I want to talk briefly about the big breaking news about Angelina Jolie. If you've been watching the news at all, I think it was yesterday morning that the news broke that she had the breast cancer gene, she found out. Her mother had died of ovarian cancer in her 50s, so Angelina went and got tested for the BRCA gene, which is, everyone has one, but there's a mutation that says you're going to be more likely to have breast cancer. She turned out to have the mutation, and she went ahead and had a double mastectomy and reconstruction. So she decided to come forward about that in a very, sophisticated way. She didn't go on all the programs or anything. She just wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times, and that's how the story broke. And she talked about her decision to do it and her choices. And it's the only reason I want to bring it up on our show is because Elizabeth and I just did a show last week when we had all women in the room, and we were coincidentally talking about if you were a celebrity and you had that kind of notoriety, would you use it to talk about a cause? Or would you be careful about what came out of your mouth? Because some of them do that very well, and some of them tend to not do it so well, and they tend to step all over themselves or, you know, and hurt their own careers as well as, you know, sort of dividing people sometimes. So in this case, Angelina Jolie came forward. Elizabeth said she didn't think she'd be able to keep it secret, that she sort of had to take the story by the horns.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think when you have a certain level of transparency in your life as a high-level figure like that, you want to get ahead of the story, knowing that the media is always kind of fishing for interesting things about your personal or professional life.
Right.
So I think, you know, it's good for an awareness standpoint, obviously, and I think that's the reason why she wanted to be so upfront and forthcoming with all of the personal information that
right.
was relevant to
right.
the decision, and just from raising awareness and for, you know, women's health care.
Well, I think there's a couple of things about it that are really interesting. One is that, you know, one of the things with a mastectomy for women, for breast cancer in general, is that women talk about, you know, losing their femininity, blah, blah, blah. Well, here's this role model who's like the most feminine woman. She's like this symbol of femininity on the planet, you know, and for her to say, you know what, it was a better choice for me to give that up and be here for my children than to hold on to those breasts just because, like, you know, so for her to do that, I think is a huge thing for women who are doubting that. And then also it was interesting because I was watching CNN, and one of the CNN anchors chose that day to admit that she also had a different situation, but had been diagnosed with breast cancer and was going to have a double mastectomy to manage her health. And it's all very interesting to me because I'm also just recovering from breast cancer, and I did not have to have a double mastectomy. I was very lucky, but I was talking to Elizabeth. It's one of those things, like, I have a broken hand right now. I have a cast, and everyone's giving me sympathy for that. And I'm like, but really, the boob is worse, but no one can see it. So really, like, I'm not getting any sympathy for that. So but anyway, I do think it's just for the awareness of it. And I'm also sort of grappling right now with the idea of whether or not to get tested for the gene, because it's a big thing. And if you have the gene, then what do you do? But you should probably know, because I also have a daughter. I should probably be ready to tell her. And I don't know. It's very interesting. So
it's amazing what they can tell you today with, you know, the technology available, but that doesn't make it any easier.
No, it's still, oh, and the other interesting thing it brought to light, and this is where we get into business a little bit, you guys, and I'll bring it back, I promise, to some male topics right after this, but
I'm good with this.
Angela, yeah, this is
okay.
Great. Angelina Jolie, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah, all right,
yes.
We're good.
They're okay.
Peace. The other thing that's really interesting is that the gene test is, I was told when I was talked to about it by my medical team that it was $4,000. On the news, they've been saying $3,000. But either way, it's a $3,000 to $4,000 test that is not always covered by insurance. And one of the reasons that it's so expensive is because the patent for the gene is owned by a single company. And apparently, so they're the only ones that can administer the test. And so apparently that happens to coincidentally be going in front of some committee or other to see if they can break that hold, because it is such an important thing and whatever. So it's interesting because...
to see intellectual property law interface with healthcare, yes.
Or to weigh your future life on a dollar amount is kind of,
Right.
I'm going to be for my kids, but I don't know if I want to spend $3,000.
Right.
Yeah, that's a...
You may regret that heavily.
Right. Well, it's also, it's one decision. Of those things where not that many people have the gene. So you're spending a lot of money, and only 5% of people actually have the gene. Whereas 1 in 8 women gets breast cancer. So you don't necessarily, if you don't have the gene, it doesn't mean you're not going to get breast cancer. It
right.
just means, if you have it, it just means you're way
right.
more likely to.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting discussion on a lot of levels. And
if you have the gene, what's the likelihood? What does it increase to?
And this is where I was confused. And I think...
Well,
for her, it was 87%.
Lifetime, 87%, either breast or ovarian.
What the high percentage is.
And apparently it's different for everyone.
Right.
They assess your percentage based on, I think, the gene, but also your age, your family history.
Genetics, right.
Right. Yeah. And so, she's young, and that's why I think the percentage was so high for her. And I'm not as young as she is, but I'm relatively young for breast cancer, and so my risk gets higher because of that. My mother also had breast cancer, so
right.
that also makes my risk higher.
Family
it seems
history
to run the
plays
family,
a big
doesn't
role.
It? I mean, it's a
it
yeah,
can
it
doesn't
can,
always
right? like it,
yeah.
There's no absolute
right.
So.
Again,
I mean, my
right.
mother had it, but she was the first one in our family, so
right.
so I didn't think it was a family thing until I got it.
Wow.
Now I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, the cases are certainly, I mean, continuing to grow, even though we're able to detect it a lot earlier today, and people are so much more aware of
right.
the risk. There's you're still seeing a lot of cases, which is kind of. We had a show yesterday about sustainability and the planet and the interrelation between, everyone on the planet's health and our taking care of the environment. And so,
right,
to me, that makes that connection.
More crap in the environment, more crap in our bodies, right?
Why are we getting more cancer?
Mm-hmm. All right, enough of this nonsense. Let's move on to the headlines so we can talk some other nonsense. A couple of Atlanta-related stories for us this morning, if I can one-handedly grab my notes here. I pulled this one out just for you, Dan.
You got it.
No car, Dan. Do you have a car now, or are you still no car, Dan?
I've got the car, but I don't drive. I just
Fiat
don't.
500.
What?
The Fiat. So you're trying to keep it to a minimum.
I can keep it to a minimum because I walk to work and I walk here and I take the MARTA and
a low carbon footprint.
Well,
relative to the rest of the world, I'm sure it's. I'm sure it's not
it's very
that
low. Right?
Yeah,
it's pretty low.
Well, it might be high relative to some places in the world. But just because I use air conditioning and all the things that work.
Right. Well, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's we're going to have MARTA actually on the show. We're going to have some representatives from MARTA coming in June to talk to us about some of their projects and what they're doing. But in the meantime, I read a story that talked about MARTA approving an additional $7 million for the Atlanta streetcar. So, there's always unforeseen things in the budget, I guess. And now the project price tag is at $59 million. So do you know what happened with that at all, Dan? Do you have any inside scoop on what caused the additional need for cash?
I don't. I know that, I think it was – I can generally say that I think – those planning the project always knew that there was going to be certain things that were going to potentially increase the price of the project and over and above what we were granted through the federal Tiger funds that were, I believe, was $47 million initially. So I generally about the streetcar, I can tell you right now that it's a little bit of pain for those of us that are downtown and dealing with it every day. It seems to be getting better, I think, on the east side now because the track work is happening, and in some places we're kind of putting in the finishing touches over there on Auburn Avenue.
Amazing.
And you got sidewalk work going on, so but now it's moving west, and so now some of the folks on the west side of the loop, and we're talking getting between Fairleigh Poplar and Centennial Park, we'll start to be feeling a little bit of what our friends in the Sweet Auburn area have been feeling in terms of utility relocations. And it's going to be a bumpy ride for the next year, but we do have now a date. We're looking at April 30th
2014.
2014 now, so.
Which is so soon, really.
It's only 11 months away.
Yeah.
I never thought that this would happen.
I know.
I'm an Atlanta native, and it's so phenomenal to me to see this happening. It's that and the Beltline. It's just, I'm blown away by it.
And it's going to be, I mean, I'm looking forward to riding it. So it's a bumpy ride for now, and then it's going to be a smooth ride.
Yeah.
And,
right. Very, yeah.
And
worth the bumps.
And it's going to connect all kinds of things, including the Beltline. And I'm glad you brought up the Beltline, because the other story I had was about the armed robbery that occurred on the Beltline. I think it was last week. Raising some security concerns. Obviously, this kind of stuff happens everywhere. I think it's really interesting from a number of perspectives. You know, from the comedy standpoint, I'm like, dude, if you're going to rob somebody, a jogger who has literally nothing on them,
right,
except their phone,
packs their wallet. Right. I typically carry all of my valuable jewels with me when
right.
I'm going out.
I wear my purse.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Or
you know.
Your car keys, because your car's 3 miles away.
Right.
Yeah. Here you go.
All
right.
Of the things.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So
she didn't have much. And she got, I mean, she was unharmed.
Right. And
so
my sister.
It wasn't a violent
It's not
crime.
Funny. It's not funny.
It's, no, it's
at all.
Scary,
it's not funny. But I have to tell you a story. My sister, who lives in Oakland, California, which has a pretty high crime rate, was mugged like that a year or so ago. And my sister is tiny. She's like 5 foot nothing, skinny as a rail. She's in her 30s, and she's just like a little piece of work. She was actually in the Israeli army, so she's a little bit of a tough cookie for her size. Yeah.
With the wrong one.
Right. So this guy comes, huge guy, comes up to her and like holds her up and is like, give me all your money or whatever. And she's like, she had money in her wallet. She had a lot of cash, actually. She had a couple $100 in cash. She'd just gotten paid in cash for something. And so she opened up like a different wallet and was like, look, I don't have anything. And then the guy was like, and she was talking on the phone to my dad while this was happening. She was on her iPhone to my dad. And then the guy was like, well, you must have something. And she goes, well, I have this. And she tried to give him the equivalent of a Breeze card, the Oakland
right.
equivalent of the Breeze card. And he was like, I don't want that. And so then he took her phone. So that was what he got. He got her phone. And my dad was still on the phone.
Right.
You know, he's like walking off with my dad going, what's happening? You know, but anyway, like there again, I guess some of these guys are just targeting cell phones. That's what they want. Or otherwise they wouldn't. Be
yeah.
doing it on
but
the Beltline.
You can't do much with them.
And it's like a tracking device now.
Yeah,
right.
I found mine at the airport literally through the tracking thing. I walked around with my iPad and I followed the green dot.
Yeah.
And I ended up at the lost and found, shockingly enough.
That's cool.
And I showed the guy and I said, do you have a phone in here? And he said, well, I don't know. And I could send a noise to it. And
nice.
So he just walked around the lost and found following like this homing beacon.
Nice.
And found it.
Yeah.
So it's basically a way to get caught.
Yeah. You can't do anything with them.
Yeah, and you can shut it down remotely. So
I mean,
it's worthless.
My sister-in-law had hers actually stolen from the skate park right there in the Fourth Ward. She set it down and somebody took it. And she came back to our house and so we went online and did the track my iPhone. And you watch the guy go get on the MARTA station and we shut it down and you could watch it. And then once you shut it down, he could tell he just threw it in the trash can.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets
a message. I don't even know why would you steal an iPhone?
Saying it's being disabled. I mean, it's not like a criminal is going to go harvest the screen,
right.
You know, for spare parts.
That's true. So, you know, the good thing about this story, Dan, to bring it all back to the wonderful city of Atlanta and all of the great things we do here, is that they immediately are like, you know what? We're not going to have this. We're going to trim back the trees. We're going to put more lights. We're going to put more cameras, and we're going to make sure this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So the good news is that they jumped right on it.
Yeah, I think and these guys can certainly speak as folks that are developing along the Beltline. You know, I think you're going to see a couple things. One, the mayor is absolutely serious about the security issues along the Beltline, as he is with crime in the city. He's made – made it a focus of his administration.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know from our experience downtown that the Atlanta police has made it a point to clean an area up, so to speak, when there's issues, they are pretty serious about that. We've seen dramatic drops in crime in downtown over the last decade to the point where the APD now tells us that we're the safest place in the city.
It used to be a little scary to come downtown, and it does not feel that way.
You know, certainly, those that remember the 70s and the 80s and just the dramatic difference in downtown and midtown from then to today. Yeah, I think the Beltline is a new experiment from Atlanta. You're going to have these things. But again, you're going to have these sort of incidents all over a major city. And the Beltline is sort of, it's a new thing. It's something that people want to hear about. And so maybe when something like this happens, it's a little bit more juicy, so it gets covered more than a similar incident might happen
right
in,
there,
in another neighborhood. But it in reality, it's just it's another place in the city, and these things are just things that happen on occasion in all major cities. But overall, my sense is, and from what I've been told, you know, there's nothing. The crime on the Beltline is not any higher than it is.
But it's salacious. It's like when Atlantic Station opened. You
sure.
Know, they did a private police force, and they didn't sell the roads to the city of Atlanta, or didn't dedicate the roads because they wanted to control the environment. But yet, there was one smash and grab in the beginning. In the press coverage, you would have thought that would have been a mass shooting.
You thought there was a riot. Yeah.
I mean, it was literally smash, stole a couple of watches out of a case. But the press was ridiculous because it was kind of this, you know, whole thing of they decided to privatize their police force and not dedicate the roads. And that was just forward-thinking in my mind, but yet it was not the norm, so therefore, the first chance, they just bashed it.
Right.
You know, literally. but yet, I think they were saying, you know, is this, you know, a foreshadowing of what's to come in Atlantic Station, and nothing else ever happened down there. And Atlantic Station, I take my kids down there all the time.
Yeah.
We hang out down there. It's great.
Yeah.
It's very safe.
Yeah.
Parking decks,
and,
you know, big, and but it's not even scary. I mean,
no, well lit. Yeah.
The only thing I was going to mention is, and these guys are a perfect example, you know, the Beltline is a catalyst for development and economic development.
Yep.
So as the Beltline gets built, you're going to see more of the type of things that we're going to be talking about later in this program happening along the Beltline. That means more eyes, ears, more private security. It will become a more secure place just by virtue of the fact that there's going to be more people around it and using it. And that's one of the great things we have going for us in downtown.
Yeah.
That there's really always kind of people around, and that really kind of helps supplement the cameras and the security and all the different police forces we have and the ambassadors. So.
Yeah, and I think we all have to still not forget to report things when they look weird. You know, with the Boston bombing,
agreed.
Certainly is an indicator of that. Yeah. I mean,
it looks weird to you. It's probably weird.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You see
yeah.
something sketchy. Yeah. It's sketchy.
It probably is.
Yeah.
Probably
trust
is.
Your intuition and say something to somebody. All right. Getting into real estate just a little bit. The last story I have about this, and I have two other stories about customer service and treatment that I want to get into briefly before we fully get into real estate. However, this one caught my eye, and it is a story about Trump doing a building here in Atlanta. Have you guys heard about this?
Not this time.
Yeah.
And so
again,
what I was going to say is, do you think he's really going to do it? It's supposed to be on in Midtown on West Peachtree. It's supposed to be a big high rise. Is it the same site?
I suspect it is across from
the Atlantic
Murder Station.
It's not a good sign that 15th. His quote in the article is, "I can't say much about it now because I don't want to jinx myself."
Right. Right.
Like
if
luck
that's
to
the lead of your story,
hey, he's in the final, you know, too, a Celebrity Apprentice. He's got a lot going on.
He's
right
busy.
Now.
He's a busy guy, and it takes a long time to do that hair.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
he may or may not make it down here.
We hope it works out for the Donald.
Do you think there's any, anything to be had from that? Just in terms of like, if Trump's interested in Atlanta, then Atlanta's more important. I mean, does it?
That was where they cased it the first time. You know, I'm a huge fan of Trump and what his buildings were beautiful. And I loved them. I think they just made a fatal misstep the last time in announcing too much too soon as reality.
Yeah.
And as a developer, I mean, it's very dangerous to use a proposed project as a tool to make the project work.
Yeah.
Because you'll have huge egg on your face if it doesn't. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, I want to go build something here. I'd love to. I think it would be great versus I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if in a condo project, people take their time and energy and money to put deposits down and think they're going to get a place. And if the project doesn't make, you've just wasted a lot of people's time and effort and money and a lot of your own. And not to mention, it puts kind of a black eye and if you'll remember last time when Trump was proposing a project, the condo market was literally about to fall off a cliff. And that was one of those projects where I said to myself, because I was building a high rise on Piedmont Park at the time, I said, oh boy, like this is going to make the already teetering market just fall, you know, even further.
Yeah.
And it kind of did.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was really a franchisor at that point.
Came
he wasn't even really
the licensing agreement.
He was selling his name. So
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I think if he, you know, if he's really developing something here in town now, I mean, I think it's great. I mean, it's a national name, and
yeah.
That location can certainly use some more residential.
We need the right residential.
Yeah.
We need people that want to live around. It's on a major transit stop from Marta, so we need people that want to take advantage of that and developers that want to take advantage of those assets and use them so we can boost our MARTA ridership.
It needs to be impactful. I mean, it doesn't need to be a building that's fully owned and bought out but yet empty. You know, when he was doing the first project, it was, you know, half sold, and literally 90% of it was supposedly foreign investment.
And flippers.
Yeah, I mean, that was right when there was some deregulation with, I can't remember if it was, some Japan or some country had a deregulation event where they could invest outside of their country for a tax break, and it was crazy the amount of capital that came in, and they started doing these road shows where they would, you know, put your project up in a road show, almost like an Amway event.
Oh, wow.
And sight unseen, buy a home.
Yeah.
And never see the site, and that's when I said to myself, this has gotten crazy.
Looks like a bubble.
I wish I wasn't building a high-rise
sort of
right
like
now.
Sort like back in the Bell Line, if it looks funny.
You're right. It is funny.
Yeah.
Use that intuition of yours.
Yeah. If it's more pressed than it is,
right.
You know,
even if it looks like a rose, if it smells like something else.
That's right.
Go with the smell. All right, I'm going to come back to real estate in a second because obviously we want to talk about Paces Properties and the new project you guys are working on and all of that. But two other quick stories. I love lists. I like to do lists on the show. And ahead of time, we just discussed this with Dan before we went on the air. It's not the best list for Atlanta, but we like to do good and bad. And this list is the most disliked companies in the United States. There are 15. No, it's not you. Not Paces Properties.
Just making sure.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good. And in fact, it's not really any real estate companies. There are 15 companies on the list. And I'm not going to go through them all. Two Atlanta companies make the list, Delta Airlines and Cox Communications. And I don't want to call them out in particular because it's categories that are really making the list. Airlines, multiple airlines on the list, multiple cable companies on the list. And this is the one that fascinated me. Number four on the list, Facebook. I just thought that was really interesting. For as much as people love Facebook, apparently they also really hate it.
What's Facebook?
Nice.
I'm not on it.
Nice. Are you really not on it?
No. Never will be either.
Okay.
I watch my wife just get sucked into that vortex every night, and I'm like, she's like, oh my gosh, I got to put this down.
And
like,
what about, do you do other social media or no?
Nope.
No social media at all?
Well, we do social media for our real estate projects.
Yeah.
And it's relatively new to me.
You're dating yourself right now.
I know. Well, you know, it's just, awesome. I got enough going on with, you know, work and family that aspect, I like keeping my personal life. My personal life, and I don't really need to see everybody else's personal life on a daily basis.
It's so funny. I have an email address.
You know, I do email, and
congratulations.
I do this thing called the internet. So
the internet's the interwebs.
Is a big thing for me.
It's
an AOL address, but, you know.
Nice. I think initially when I got onto Facebook, however, I have a 20-year-old daughter, and so I got on it because she was on it, and I wanted to make sure I wanted to be her friend on there so I could see what she was doing
I get on Facebook my daughters get older.
Yeah, and she let me be her friend and I see her activity. And now that she's away at college, it's actually nice because I get to see sort of some of the things she's doing. I don't look at it very much though, and that was what I was going to say. In the beginning, I feel like I was sucked into it too. And then I did the same. I pulled back and I go on it occasionally now to post something that's work related.
Right.
But I don't spend time on it anymore. However, it's just interesting to me that...
What was the dislike factor due to the Facebook dislike?
They don't say it's the American Customer Satisfaction Index. So I assume that they survey people on a lot of different things. But, you know, it has to do with... I think for the most part, it has to do with sort of customer service, what you feel like you're getting or not getting, your expectations.
Right. Well, as Facebook's been forced to meet revenue targets, the advertising on the site is, you know, expanded greatly. Think, you know, people really liked it, just like anything, for free with no ads.
Right.
You think, well, that's great. And then the ads start popping up.
Well,
and
then you go public and then you have to make money.
Right.
I mean,
Exactly.
Is that in the privacy concerns a lot of people?
Right.
That's my concern.
Privacy concerns about Facebook. So I think it's probably the combination of the ads and the privacy.
Well,
portal to open your life up to people that you never would.
And I think all the apps, too, I think frustrate people. And they're not owned by Facebook. But your perception as a customer is that you're still on Facebook. And so if you go to an app and the app doesn't work, then you get frustrated with Facebook.
Right.
also, if you think about it, all the people that are paying for ads, you know, which I've done before for different projects I've done, can get frustrated because they are the real customers because they're the paying customers. And if they're not getting a return on their investment, they're going to get pissed off.
Right.
So
a lot of mixed reviews on that. I will say anecdotally, we have had pretty – we as in Central Atlanta Progress has had a pretty good rate of success with ads. Now, what we've done is we've been able to attach ourselves to things like the Atlanta Falcons or the Braves. And so bringing in a lot of these people that are sort of already captive audiences for downtown but maybe aren't – they're thinking about their team or the attraction that they're most interested in but aren't necessarily thinking about the area in which they exist. And you know, hey, why don't we think about downtown as a place where we could go and – have a meal or do something before or after a game or an event or a concert. So we've sort of been able to leverage a lot of the assets of downtown and their social media capacity to bring in. And now we hit, you know, 10,000 Facebook fans the other day, which
wow.
is a pretty good milestone. It puts us ahead of, you know, a lot of the other peer organizations, which is,
David's like,
how many Facebook friends do you have, David?
Zero. I have tons, I hear, but I don't talk to them.
Well, I think, I mean, that's the thing with ads and marketing. When they peg you right, when you see the ad that you want to see and you're like, yeah, that's what I want. You're thrilled to death that they chose to advertise to you.
Yeah,
it's when
absolutely.
They, you know, you get the ad that you think, well, I don't want that, that you get pissed off, which this story kind of reminds me of, like, you know, the old adage, like, hate isn't the opposite of love. So, like, even though people might hate these companies, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're disengaged as a customer.
Sure.
It's almost
not like
a good
to stop using airplanes.
Yeah,
it's
like,
exactly.
You know, or stop using cable.
Exactly.
Right. It's the problem when it's a big part of your life, and therefore you cannot win.
Right.
I mean,
you cannot win.
Delta cannot win. I mean, but yet I still fly them.
Well,
I love Delta.
The airlines, I feel like
they make me mad when they're late, but I don't hate them.
Yeah, but see, the airlines, I almost give a pass to a little bit, though they could do a better job of being nicer about stuff when it falls apart.
Get ahead of their message is the best thing.
Though I have
to
say, I had an issue with a flight a couple of, I guess it was this year, earlier in the year. My daughter and I, it was just in March, actually, we were meeting in Florida to visit my mom on my daughter's spring break, and my daughter was in Boston, and it was a blizzard. Like up to her nose in snow. And I was flying from here. So I called Delta and I said, here's the situation. Like my flight's on time and it's all good, but I was supposed to meet my daughter in the Atlanta airport and she's not going to make it because she's stuck in Boston. Can you help me? And the guy was so nice.
Oh, that's great.
And they rerouted her directly to Sarasota so she wouldn't have to change planes and I wouldn't have to wait for 6 hours in Tampa and all this stuff. So they can really do a good job sometimes. It's just, I think that sometimes the people in the airport get cranky.
Yeah.
Well, and people don't
plus
often
TSA.
Call Delta anymore is the weird thing. I mean, a lot of times they try and do it online,
online.
And they get frustrated and try. You can't reroute somebody because you don't know what's going on in other cities.
Right.
People forget we have these things called phones.
Right.
And usually you can get a person on the other end.
Yeah.
It might take a little time, but that's what they're there for. We just kind of forget that.
And
these phones
and
actually work for other stuff than texting and email.
And seriously, the guy
Facebook.
Went over and above because I thought he was going to say no. Like, we're going to have to charge you a fee. And he
the
didn't
first
do...
call he got all day, probably.
And he was like, he asked me, he said to me, can you conference your daughter into the call so we can make sure
that's
she's...
Amazing.
I mean,
that's
he
impressive.
Was really
that's
good.
Great.
Yeah,
the
so...
The other thing is you tend to associate your entire airport and flight experience with your airline.
Yes.
And, you know, look, getting to the airport, getting through security is not fun.
No.
And, you know, it's hard to go into your relationship with Delta with a positive vibe after you've, you know, had to wait in line for 45 minutes and, you know, you
got strip search.
Yeah, you exactly.
X-ray naked
in
the
middle of the
field.
Yeah, you not, you
wipe out on the
Delta.
Train.
I mean, Delta's
and,
you know, the guy on the end. I mean, it's Hartsfield that you should
right,
be angry
but people
at.
You don't. You're right.
No
people
one,
don't separate
you
can't
that.
You can't
Hartsfield
separate
as a like, company or a place or anything. It's
that's
just
right.
People that work at Delta.
That's right.
Especially.
Well, on that note, talking about customer service. So the other thing I had, the other list I had this time was, and I'm not going to read the whole list, but it's a list about the best hotel freebies in the market, in the whole U.S. And you know how most of the time you go to a hotel and they just completely rip you off. In fact, we were talking – my mom came into town. My mom's very spoiled. I love her to death, but she likes the finer things in life. And so she came in this weekend for Mother's Day, and she stayed at the Ritz.
Excellent.
And part of the package was we got like a boatload of money to spend on breakfast every day. So I went over there to have breakfast with her.
Sure.
Why not, right? So we get the bill, and the coffee was $12.
Boatload of money got you like a little continental breakfast.
Not even kidding. It got you nothing. $12.
Was the coffee good?
It wasn't even that great. It was just okay. No, Buckhead.
Yeah.
But yeah, so To me, that type of behavior by companies, and I generally think very favorably of the Ritz. I think they generally have excellent service, and everything they do is really top-notch. However, is it necessary for them to charge $12 for coffee?
Imagine imagine the angst of the person that doesn't have a boatload of credit money.
Right, and then they get the bill. Because you're assuming it's going to be $3, right? And it's $12.
Four annoys you a little bit because you get, you know, go get Starbucks for the same, but 12? Wow.
Right, 12.
That's pushing it.
It's
crazy.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. So some of these hotels, and I'm not going to, again, not going to list names and things, are all over the country, do things like one of them is giving away free mini bar snacks. Everything in their mini bar is free.
I'm in.
Other hotels are doing, and this is more common, a free happy hour. Some of them are doing free in-room welcome gifts. Some of them are giving you free access to their spa. The treatments are still free, but like you can use the saunas and those types of things for free. Some of them have stepped it up and are providing free yoga classes. The Plaza in New York, believe it or not, gives you free car service. If it's available, you have to register for it up front. You can ride in their Rolls Royce for free.
Sweet. The question is it really free? I mean,
you're paying $12 for your coffee
right.
So that somebody else can ride for free in this stupid Rolls Royce. Some of them have lending libraries. Some of them are doing some more unique things. Some of them are really funny. Like the Four Seasons, one of their properties offers free poolside Evian spritzes. So if you're hot, they'll come over and spritz you with Evian. Hilarious.
Would you like me to spray?
That changes my decision
would you like
about
me to
where
spray
I stay.
In the face? Yes, please.
Right. Anyway, there's some other things. Loaner bicycles. You'd like that, Dan. Some things like that. But
can you imagine the amount of marketing research that goes into the why
of what
behind
to,
like why they're offering that for free?
Right.
I mean,
well, the reason
it's an amazing amount of data that they've crunched to determine that that's a great
that's
thing
gonna
to
drive
offer
behavior.
Free. Right. I mean, it's going
to. I'd like to see that, Dan. I can't believe that a face spritz really changes somebody's mind.
I mean, it's not like some dude was sitting around a table and said, "Hey, how about if we spray people in the face for free and therefore people." Will come. I mean, you got to think there's a lot of sort of.
It's the little things.
But the thing is.
I would be afraid to bring that up at a marketing meeting. Like,
well, hey, we'll do this.
For free. You're fired.
But the thing is, you know what is the interesting thing about that is that it's done by the pool attendants, right? And so they're walking around probably with like a little tool belt with their little Evian spray, right? But they're also walking around. So if you need another towel, if you want to buy a $13 margarita, they're there to take that order from you. So it's probably really smart. It's a way for them to interact.
And you guys well know that people like those little luxuries. I mean, you're building a lot of that into the project.
Sure, yep.
Right. And so
because that's what...
The thing before I let you get too far into...
It's dangerous to say things are free when sometimes people perceive they should be getting that for free already.
Right.
That's the dangerous part. Like, we're offering... It was one thing you mentioned, and I can't remember what it was exactly, but I said to myself, like...
That should be free.
Shouldn't that be free anyways?
See, I agree.
That to me is kind of insulting as a consumer. Like,
why isn't
it free in the first place?
You get a free pillow.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
We will let you have a blanket.
You get a chocolate mint on your bed. Like,
isn't that
right? I thought that was part of the package, period.
Right.
You know, forever and ever.
Well, it's so interesting because one of the things that always irked me in hotels, and still a lot of them do this, when you walk into the hotel and you go into your room and the bottled water is like $8. And you're like, really? You can't just sport me a $1.29 bottle of water for free?
But it's like sitting out there.
Right.
And there's no $8 price tag sitting on it. So by proxy, you sort of say,
plus,
you just got off
an airplane.
That was nice.
You've been in a cab. I mean, you're thirsty. It's the biggest.
And it usually feeds you water. And $20.
Right.
And you don't know it until you get your bill when you're checking out. And you're like, that is just, don't
not
put
right.
it out there.
Right.
If it's not free. If it's in the mini bar, I know it's not. I get that.
But
don't make me drink a hot bottle of Fiji water for $20 and not know about it.
Yeah,
I
agree.
I'm mad.
But one of the things, the reason I even was interested in this story, and we're going to just talk about this for a minute, and then we're going to just talk all about you guys, because I know I'm hogging the show. But here's the thing. I get really frustrated when companies are short-sighted in that way. Because to me, if you're charging $12 for coffee, as much as I love the experience, I have a little bit of a, pardon the expression, bitter taste in my mouth from that coffee. And,
I can tell.
Yeah. I just had a bad experience with my cell phone provider, T-Mobile, who I'm officially trashing on the air.
I was with them forever.
Well,
and I switched to Verizon.
And I had a really bad taste in my mouth.
It was like a breakup.
Right. Because here's the thing. All these companies, the cable companies do it too. They do all this stuff to woo new members, new clients, new customers. And then once they have you, they just stick it to you.
I went through the same thing with them. I was with them with PowerTel, VoiceStream, T-Mobile. I mean, like 13, 14 years.
Yeah.
But because of that, I was treated literally like the scum of the earth.
Right.
Them.
Like you were on the bottom
of
their shoe.
Totally. Yeah. Completely and utterly. Like I would expect a free phone like every 5 years or something.
Something.
You know, if I break a phone, to not get whipsawed into another 40-year contract. I mean, I couldn't get out of a contract with them. I was with them for 15 years in four companies.
Right, right. Well, that was my whole issue, was around the contract too. And the thing is, they sent me a letter. I literally took the time to handwrite, you know, to write. I typed a letter and mailed it to their, thinking, you know, there's no way I'm going to get help on the phone, because you get somebody in another country that doesn't even understand what you're saying.
Right.
And then you ask for a manager and they just pass you to their buddy, and that person doesn't know anything either.
Yeah. I mean, just change their voice.
Right. Oh, hello. I am the manager. Yeah. You know?
You have the manager.
Right. So I wrote a letter, and they wrote me a letter back basically saying, F you. Like, we got your letter. We looked at your case. We're not helping you. Not even one, nothing. We're not doing anything for you. Yeah. And so here's the thing. It'll cost me $200 to break my contract.
That was what I got in my relationship with him, was the $200 breakup fee.
Right. I get a $200 breakup fee, or I can continue to pay them $140 a month for the next year and a half or whatever it is. I'd rather pay the $200 and never give them another dime.
Yeah.
I'm so pissed.
Yeah. And
they don't know who I am. Like, maybe this show is listened to by a million people, and I'm now social media-izing them to death.
Yeah, T-Mobile needs to get computers, because I don't think they have them.
I think you might be
otherwise
right.
They would know that I'd been a customer there for 14 years. And if I'm mad, probably make me happy.
It's so dumb.
You know, on some level, just throw me a bone. Say, all right, we'll knock $50 off your breakup fee.
Right.
Or, you know, we'll give you a new phone for, you know, half.
Or we'll cut the contract back by 6 months.
Right.
We can't take it all off, but we'll go back 6 months on it.
Yeah.
Or something. Right. Throw me a bone.
Yeah. Throw me a bone.
Throw me a bone. That's all I'm asking.
Well, it's amazing.
It just has to be a little bone, too.
It could just be being nice.
Just make me feel something, you know.
Right. I mean, it's you know, like your Delta example or something along those lines. There's a way to be nice to somebody, you know, and understand their situation and help them out. Doesn't have to really cost a whole lot of money or be any huge, you know, give on their part. And then your feelings toward them change to the positive, and that means a lot over time.
Right. I mean, here's the thing.
Can I bash a company?
Yeah.
Restoration Hardware. It's very similar.
Really?
I bought a rug from Restoration Hardware November 25th. This is sad, I know the date, because it was my wife's big Christmas present.
Yeah.
In stock, you know, available for immediate ship. So it was Christmas, you know, and I'm calling them on like the 20th, 21st. I'm like, where? And it's not a cheap rug.
Yeah.
It's for our living room.
So you ordered this on November 25th.
And no.
It's December 20th.
It's now May.
Oh. You know,
and I still do not have this rug.
Shut up.
I still do not have this rug. And when you're in a price point of, you know, $3,000 plus for a big living room rug, are there that many people like ahead of me in line in the queue? And the worst part is, I've called them a couple times. I quit. And the worst part about it is that rug's going to come back, and I'm going to send it back to them.
Yeah.
Because I'm so angry now. When I've called them, I said, listen.
Every time you walk in your living room, you'll feel hate.
Yeah. I mean, and my wife has just been on it. I mean, it was her rug that she loved, so that's why I got it for a Christmas present. Now it's just tainted as heck.
Yeah, yeah.
So I called Restoration Hardware, and I said, all right, every time I go online to check on the status of this, it has a new date for delivery. And then in the interim, I'll go and check again, and it says, you know, pending shipment. The date will just evaporate from the webpage, and then a month later, it'll be a new date 2 months after that.
Oh, my God.
And I said, I got somebody on the phone. I said, all right, here's my major issue at this point is I can go on your website right now, and it tells me that the delivery date of that rug is the same one you're telling me on my pending order of 6 months old. I think you're lying to somebody, and I don't know it is, but why can't you make rugs? And I said, just throw me a bone. I mean, it's $125 in shipping that I'm going to pay for this, so can you just go ahead and waive the shipping charge? Sir, our policy is this.
Right?
Once you get the item, then you can call us, and we can talk about your pain and suffering.
And can I say,
and I'm like, that is the most,
that order and go
I literally was
circle.
Like, am I the only one taking crazy pills here? Because
yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Like, well, here's
so
the thing.
I have to wait for it to come, and then I can call you and gripe, and you, what
Might,
are you going to give me something then?
No way.
I pretty much doubt you are, because I kind of have it.
Yeah, no
and
way.
And you've gotten paid.
Once you have the item, you'll never even get someone on the phone. And here's the thing that's so funny about that. Well, of course, you're not a social media guy, but if you were, First of all, the fact is that you're like a real estate developer, and that's furniture, right?
Yeah, I can't
like,
get a rug.
But the thing is, like, you could totally be an awesome customer for them because ostensibly you have
Absolutely.
Model homes and you have
raving
places
about.
You could advertise.
Yeah. Yeah,
totally.
And they yeah. have no idea, yeah. and they could be pissing off Donald Trump for all they know, but they don't care.
And if an angry customer on an item in that price point calls. The first thing in their call sheet of how to deal with that be, sir, what can we do
to make you happy today?
Exactly.
What is there any, and if I ask for the rug for free, I get it. They're going to say no. But at least you open the door to understand the customer a little bit more, whereas they just kept saying, not sorry.
Right.
It's unfortunate that this is occurring. And I'm like, well, what is it? Where is the rug?
Right.
Like,
are they making it?
Are they run out of the wool or what? I don't have access to that information. Do you have access to anything? Not really.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, here's a quick.
And you can't offer me $125 off my shipping, which hasn't occurred. And I know for a fact that I can go online. And you're offering free shipping on other stuff right now.
Right.
Through some like retail me not, you know, coupon.
Right.
Here's an opposite example. For you. So we redid our house about 5 years ago. We used all the same kind of locks. This is Baldwin is the name of the hardware.
We're just bashing.
I love it.
So well, this is good. So so the other day, for some reason, like the knob that has a key, and everything's keyed the same all around the house, decides to quit working. So being the way that I usually approach things like this, I smash the key in and turn it, and of course it breaks off. In the lock.
Of course.
I showed that lock.
So take a picture of my broken key, which has the number on it that is the right key, and a picture of the lock, the knob, and I go to their website, go to customer service, fill up the little form, send them these pictures.
Yeah.
I get a note back that says, we're sorry you're having a problem. And then the next day, a whole new lock shows up at my house.
Wow.
And you're the biggest fan of Baldwin forever.
Forever.
That's right. Why I'm talking about Baldwin now.
And can I also just say?
I got to rekey my house, and I'm going to
You're going to go?
I mean, absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
But here's the thing. Once again, you're a real estate developer.
Yeah.
They didn't know
they
that.
They had no idea.
But now.
I'm just Joe Schmo.
Right. But now you might be very willing to talk.
We like Baldwin.
Positively.
So when we're absolutely. Arguing about the finishes on a project, and say I have a passion about locks, Meredith is going to say, David, Baldwin did this for me, and I'm going to say, oh, my gosh, we're totally using that.
Done.
We're going to find a way to use
Done.
It. Because right. we can basically sell that to our customers as well.
Yeah.
I mean, just because it's the developer story, I mean, you just say, hey, this is how great these guys are.
Right.
Because getting into your home and getting out of your home and securing your home is huge and making it easy. Because a lot of people, you break that key, you go to Ace Hardware, you try and get a new key made, then you sit there with tweezers and try and yank that
yeah.
thing out.
Pretty much.
And it's a nightmare.
You end up with Half having to carry two or three locks around for the same house, which
right.
I've had to do before.
Right,
right.
Yeah. Your front door, your back door are different keys.
The point
keys.
Is it's amazing what, you know, and that couldn't possibly have cost them a whole lot, I wouldn't think.
Right.
And I wrote them an email back and said, this is great, thank you, do you want the old lock? And they were like, no, it's not worth the shipping. We just hope you're happy. I mean,
wow.
Well, that's
the polar opposite.
That's capital reinvestment in a company, though. Right. I mean, T-Mobile. Companies like that, I don't think they reinvest the capital into the systems approach to customer service because
Absolutely.
When you get big, if you don't do that, I mean, maybe they're big enough and maybe they're making enough dough, I guess. I don't know. But if you don't, you know, spend that money on your systems, I mean, you're going to just break down eventually. And if you're a Comcast and think you're the only guy in town forever and ever, eventually AT&T is going to say, you know what? I think that if we just show up in the cable business, we will crush it.
Yeah.
And you know what? When they did, I switched to them. They're not – I mean, they're great. I think they're amazing just because it's not Comcast.
Yeah.
There's certain industries where all you have to do is not
And I tell
stop.
Them. I tell everybody about it. Oh,
the bar's not
Universe
high,
is
right?
the best. So, well, if you ask me truly why is Universe the best?
Because it's not Comcast.
Because the guy actually did show up in the five-hour window.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he may have showed
you
up in four and a half
hour
hours.
But
he actually showed up versus Comcast doesn't show up. And then doesn't even tell you why they didn't, and then will sometimes blame you
right.
that you didn't answer the pre-courtesy call.
Right.
Like, the guy's coming. If you don't answer the courtesy call,
they don't come.
They don't. And I'm like, I said, well, how is that a courtesy exactly?
Right. What is courteous about
so
that?
So if I leave my phone on my counter while I'm waiting at my house, ruining my whole day to go take the trash out, and I miss your courtesy call, Your courtesy is that you're not going to show up.
Wow.
You're going to waste my whole day.
You have to answer that call. And I'm like, I told you I was going to be there.
Better name for this, a mandatory.
How about you give me your answer number, call, and I will give you a courtesy call
at 3 a.m.
after 4 hours.
Right.
And then I will come to your house. I'll sit with you for the rest of the day.
So I think to sum up our customer service bitch session, Comcast equals bad. T-Mobile, bad. Restoration Hardware, bad.
Awful.
Baldwin Locks, awesome. Yes. Delta, pretty damn good.
There you go.
Okay. Moving on.
Figured out.
I don't know Cox Communications, so.
I don't.
No gripe.
Well, apparently they are a cable. Dan was saying earlier, because I couldn't understand why they would even be on that list, but because they're not a cable provider here, but they are a cable provider in other markets.
Right.
So that is why.
They're in Cobb County, aren't they? No, that's Charter.
Yeah. Charter's on the list, too, by the way. Okay, so let's talk about Pace's properties. Let's talk about this new project you guys have going. So one of you guys take the ball and run.
You want to jump in there?
We'll do what we'd always do. It's an Inman Park. We bought the Stove Works, which is at Crog Street and Lake, and we bought 99 Crog Street, which is across the street from the Stove Works, formerly known as Tyler Perry's production studios.
Okay, so he moved.
He moved a while back.
Okay,
it was basically just not abandoned, but he turned into a storage facility when he did his huge project out at the old Delta hangar facility.
Okay.
And it was one of those projects. It was right after Merritt and I partnered up about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's about right.
That we started the project with just the Tyler Perry piece. And in real estate, the way we think, at least, is that, projects can be great on their own, but, the real impact comes from making an impact to an area. And a lot of that is just sheer size. I mean, you can impact an area from the size of a project. I mean, a whole community at large. And so we were looking at the Tyler Perry facility on its own. And I got a call from my great buddy Mel Stowers about a little piece of property owned across the street, which is just a gravel lot. And it just kind of hit Merritt. And I went, why don't we just see if he'll sell the whole shooting match because he owned the Stove Works. And then we started looking at the 99 building in a totally different light, which was, we love building apartments and we love doing retail. So when we were just looking at the Tyler Perry piece, we were looking at it as, apartments or retail or a mix of both. And then we started negotiating with the owners of the Stove Works, and it changed the whole dynamic of the whole project. The great part about it for, Inman Park, I guess, and us, hopefully, is that we're going to save the Tyler Perry building, which is a beautiful circa what year?
I think it's late 1800s, early 1900s.
I mean, the project that we've bought and now are, developing is truly the entire, area of the former, Atlanta Stove Works, where they did potbelly stoves and cast iron skillets. And then it got kind of broken up over the years, and then Mel redeveloped the Stove Works into loft office. So we've now sort of recombined it all again, and Tyler was using the 99 building as like a production studio. I mean, I think he shot House of Pain there. I mean, it's just big, huge, like sound stages and whatnot. And the amount of character and just charisma of that structure in itself, when we finished demolition, because he had a lot of mezzanine space and dressing rooms and whatnot, we finished demolition, and I don't have these moments enough in real estate where I walked in that building when it's fully demoed out and I gasped. I mean, I lost my breath. I mean, it is just the most stunning space you've ever seen. 20-foot wow. ceilings, clear story glass up top, beautiful webbed steel structures on the inside. Brick is gorgeous. And we had already designed we're doing a retail project, which is somewhat unique in the sense that it's totally food, oriented. I mean, the whole thing.
Oh, really?
It is truly a food-oriented project. It's food from the standpoint of restaurants.
We got some flowers, too.
We do have flowers. Food, restaurant food, you go down, you eat it, you stay there, you drink, and have a good time, as well as the retail play of food. You go buy food.
Okay.
And take it home with you. Because we've got restaurants and we've got a market, a true market. Our sort of inspiration was, Oxbow Market in Napa, the Ferry Building in San Francisco, as well as Melrose Market in Seattle. And we'll have 22 market stalls, which are roughly around 400 square feet each,
cool.
and six restaurants by the end of it. And it's all under one giant roof. I mean, it's one building, And all of this great stuff is within. You know, the market's kind of in the middle of the building with this great commons, but, you know, corridor that goes around it. And all the market, all the restaurants are on the either facing Croc Street or on the backside of the building with great huge porch, outdoor seating. And we've got this beautiful old bridge that connects the properties. I mean, it's going to be.
And so I hate to ask this because I don't want to put a damper on anything, but parking?
We've got lots. A lot of it.
Okay, good. Because that's always an in-town concern.
Issue. My dad always told me, you know, build to your clientele, and you'll learn this later in life. That's women. I mean, if they don't feel safe and if they don't feel like they can get in and get out, or if the unknown for women is always the thing you got to, you know, get around. I mean, women don't like driving into parking decks.
But they're dark and scary.
They don't know what's beyond there. Can they get out? Is there construction going on? Will I be able to find my car once I get back? I mean, and can I get into that parking deck and find the store that I want to go to from that parking space? And so he always told me, you know, I don't care if it's, you know, six parking spaces out in front of the building and then a parking deck behind. At least they've driven by and they've seen that cars are parked on the street there, and therefore they will drive into that parking deck eventually. The first time they may just wait until they get one of the six parking spots, but they will always come back if they can, you know, just get in there once.
Well, and it is funny because one of the most frustrating things, and I am a woman, clearly, is getting into a parking garage and getting out of your car and not knowing where to go.
Right.
Like, you're standing there and you don't even know where the staircase is, exactly, or the elevator is, and you're like, what do I do now?
Because you saw the store when you drove by it.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you're in this deck, and how do you connect the dots.
I'm so glad you're taking care of that. I'll be over.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you're talking about sort of the evolution of the project, and it started, I live right down the street, so I was driving by this thing forever.
Yeah.
Everybody who has ever driven by that building has thought, God, that really should be something else.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
I've been driving past it for 10 years thinking that.
You didn't like the razor wire? We're going to keep that.
And so, yeah, and so we sort of jumped into it and started working on that side. And we originally were trying to put some pretty high density around the existing brick building. And started working with the neighborhood. With parking decks. And we actually went and talked to Kevin Rathbun, who really sort of directed us to this market concept. I mean, that was very early on, you know. I mean,
wait, what a better source for intel as to what do you think? You look at this all day, every day.
Right.
He gave us the thought, and then we just sort of got to rain with it. I mean, it was a great thought. We hadn't thought it.
It wasn't. And so then we started meeting with the neighborhood, and frankly, the neighborhood really was not fond of the super high density on the ends. Now, the Beltline and the city planners loved it, but the neighborhood basically they did not like it.
So, we thought the preservation of the existing structure would combat the sort of density aspect. And they were like,
they didn't feel that way.
We think it's great that you're saving that building, but doesn't mean
we don't want a five-story building on the corner.
Right.
So,
because it's single family on that side of the street that touches it.
So we started kind of revamping, you know, basically working with the neighborhood in terms of, okay, well, what can you do? What do you like? What don't you like? And so, you know, as we went through this process of massaging the project into what we thought it wanted to be, the other side of the street became available, and we realized we could really create a mixed-use project with different uses that were truly separate. And at that point, that's when the parking, around that time, we were talking to a couple of different tenants, restaurant tenants, and guys were saying, hey, if you keep that old building, I'm in.
Yeah.
If you tear it down and build something new, I'm not interested.
Yeah,
and so
build buildings like that.
No.
And I mean, so, you can kind of, but not the character. You just can't do
just
it.
Just not there. So we sort of say, well, God, I mean, let's think about this holistically. And then, you know, there's a huge parking lot, and frankly, there are no parking lots basically left. Everything's turning into decks. And we said, you know, this could be a truly amazing retail location if you have lots of surface parking where people can see where they're going.
Abundant. I mean, it's a big parking field, but it's not just a vast, you know, asphalt scape. And it's right there.
The idea of the Avenue shopping centers, mm-hmm. like that was one of the beauties of those places is that
absolutely.
I can see, I don't want to walk through the entire mall. I just want to go to the Gap or whatever, and I can pull up right in front of it and shop.
It's a model sort of concept. The Avenues is, it's really amazing concept.
So it's
smart to think it because as a customer, you don't necessarily know why you like it. You just know you like it.
No, that's right. And you can't help that you go back to the places that work for you.
Yes.
And you don't go back to the places where you're not comfortable.
Correct.
We own the Vines Jubilee Shopping Center, and that was a project that my dad started building in the early 80s in the mall era, and he passed away in 96-ish. Six. And so I built the last, like, six phases of it, but it's exactly the same concept, just a smaller scale than the Avenues concept, but office is there. We work there every day, and a lot of times we kind of forget, oh, wait a minute. This is amazing. We pull up, we walk right up to our offices, and,
yeah, right. And the
land
thing,
is so expensive, it's kind of hard to kind of think in those, you know,
I didn't realize that you guys own Vining's Jubilee, but that's a very good example because it's not a vast, giant parking lot. It's like it's interesting
it's
even to drive through
ones,
it.
Yeah.
You discover
it doesn't
new
annoy
things.
You.
No.
Because parking is tough over there because we've, you know, got a lot of customers.
Right.
But at the same time, you can always get this when you do find your parking space. There's probably a store in there that you hadn't planned on going to, but you're going to pop in.
Yeah, because you're walking right past
it. Yeah,
I mean,
we did a study
years ago
there, and a huge number of our customers were coming and parking, hitting on average six stores per trip, and staying for 90 minutes.
Yeah, every time I go there, I stay longer than I
meant to. Yeah, because you get coffee, you get ice cream, you get a salad, you shop, get some shoes, get a dress. I mean, it just works.
Well, that's the same. It's no different than what we're doing on Krog Street.
We want to grab them, pull them in.
Keep them.
Yeah, I mean, Krog Street is hopefully a place where, you go to eat, but within the market you can shop. So it may be
Krog Street Market.
Krog Street Market.
Krog Street Market.
We have to make sure we get that branding in.
That's the official title.
There's what's the time frame on all this?
We hope to deliver the restaurant and market stall spaces to our tenants for their build out in the end of the summer.
Okay.
And then
we've been waiting on a permit, which I don't know if you saw the email last night, but it's ready.
Wow.
I did not see the email.
I like to be a part of the process here. This is awesome.
We do have to take.
You don't want
to
be the guy that's running with the
permit. We do have to take the Department of Health another
$300. You want to be the guy getting the emails as the permit status, because a guy in our office is pulling his hair out often.
Yeah. Because we're all sitting there going, so we have to deliver all these spaces, Pat. When are we going to start?
Yeah. Hey, nice. Pat.
Where's
how are
the permit?
So if we deliver in the summer, they'll be open in the fall.
Yeah.
Most tenants have a 3 or 4 month process. Some of the bigger restaurants will have, 5 or 6. I mean, we've got some restaurants that are, a couple restaurants that are, one that's 5,000 feet, 5, 000, one that's
3,500. Yeah.
So you guys develop, but you also keep them and become the landlords.
Retail and apartments, if we're developing them, we're more of a long-term holder.
Okay.
That's kind of been the sort of, MO for our company for many, many years. And, it allows us to really look at the project from a long-term perspective, meaning that I think that it would be safe to say that we probably spend more money on the front end than the average Joe, because it's a very long-term perspective. It's going to be an asset that we're going to hold for a long period of time. And I'm a bit of a, architectural pain in the rump because of my partners, but I take it very seriously, and it's a brand of our company, and therefore, the light fixtures and the colors. They may be a little more expensive.
Don't go to light fixtures.
But they are always amazing looking.
Well, the other thing
and
is
they don't come from Restoration Hardware.
No, they don't. I hand pick them all myself. It takes time, but what?
The other thing is, and if you look at what we are doing from a standard perspective, I mean, apartments are easy, and a Target shopping center is typically easy to finance and get done if you can put it together.
I
say easy. It's not easy. It's a formula, basically. And here, and we learned this in this process, that 30,000 feet of restaurant space and small market tenants makes most capital providers freak out. And so, quite frankly,
you're not going to have pre-leases.
It was anchors. It was one where, like, to the average Joe and to us, it made perfect sense. Like, wow, this is really something that will have great value long term, but it's just not – there aren't many examples of it, and so it's not clear and cut and dry. And so,
you got to get down to the true meaning of the real estate. You got to see it for what it is, and Kevin Brustowski at NXT did that for us. I mean, he's a great banker and a great friend, and he really saw it for what – I mean, we had so many moving parts in this project. We had an existing office building that was fully leased. We had, a couple of vacant parcels of land that would be a development site. We had an existing building. We were, basically, adaptive reuse to retail. I mean, it's all good. But at the same time, equity and debt sources are very sort of stratified in what they do. And, you know, we lend for apartments, we lend for retail, we lend for hotel. So
we don't lend for restaurants.
Or exactly.
We don't lend on a spec restaurant deal with loft office and some vacant dirt. You know, that was it was challenging.
Yeah, we were raising the capital and the debt on this project, and it was one of those things where I'm like, this is like the best deal ever. But people are constantly saying, well, can we just do the apartments? Or we'd love to just do the retail.
Right.
Well, you kind of can, but
you
kind of need to buy it first.
Right.
And we can't just chop up pieces on the front end. Like we had like 7 different owners. It was just – it was an amazing transaction. I got a lot of gray hair on it, but at the same time –
we do need to give some props to our leasing agent, Lily Heimberger at SRS. She has done an amazing job leasing.
Phenomenal.
Something that, frankly – even today is still selling the dream, and we're probably at 70% leased at this point.
Nice.
Selling the dream is hard, as you know.
There's nothing
T-Mobile
to look at.
Conversation and whatnot. I mean, it's tough. I mean, you're telling somebody, you know, this rendering, it's going to be just.
It's
like
really
going
to happen.
It's going to happen, and she's done a phenomenal job. I mean, she has really made it a true passion project. And
I think you might have given her a couple of gray hairs too, Jim.
Yeah, she's I mean, when a leasing team takes it on as if it was their own, you can't ask for anything more than that.
Well, so
but sometimes you have to deal with a lot of angst.
If it's 70% leased, that means you're still looking for a few more people. So if people want more information on the property in terms of just being a consumer or if they're looking for space, how do they find you guys?
Well, I think Paces Properties, our website is up. And then
it's just pacesproperties.com.
Okay.
On the leasing front,
T-I-E-S.
Lily Heimberger at SRS Real Estate. They're they're leading the leasing efforts, so either us or them. I mean, obviously, we're Lily and David and I all work so closely that any of us would be happy to.
And I think it's
what's our website for the project? Is it just Croc Street?
I think
Market?
It's Croc Street Market.
CrocStreetMarket.com. It's still under construction, but there is a
there's a portal.
You can put your email address in there, and we'll send you updates.
It's already, as you mentioned, like Rathbun Steakhouse, and it's already such a great sort of destination for some people. It sounds like it's going to make it, you know, 20 times more of a great destination, and for people who like food too, which is really fun.
Yeah,
and we've got some tenants that are going to, I mean, blow people's minds. I mean, I'm not a huge foodie, in the sense that, I mean, I kind of eat to live. I don't live to eat.
Yeah.
But I've gotten to sort of intimately involved in this project and seeing how much the sort of food community is into that.
Oh yeah.
And knowing from my partners and whatnot, the people that we're getting, I mean, they are it's the tenderloin cut of,
nice.
I mean, it is, it's,
nice
it's
analogy.
Stunning. It's stunning. I mean, it's, which is a great feeling.
Did
as
you really
a developer
make that up
because
on your...
these, you know, for folks like this to step out and do it, you know, and put their name on something like this means you've done something right.
Yeah.
Now we just, well, now we got to actually, you know, do it.
No, yeah. It'll be really exciting. And frankly, for the Beltline and that whole side of town, I mean, you know, Pond City Market, which we're equally as excited about that. I mean, that's a massive project.
Yeah.
That's
going to
be, I mean, that's going to have regional impact when they're finished with that.
Absolutely.
That's an amazing project.
From the CAP side, you know, just quickly, you know, this project on Croc Street, Pond City Market, these aren't projects that are actually in downtown proper, but, you know, we see them as, you know, it, projects that benefit downtown and you know, downtown can benefit them, and in town, we really see in town, the core of Atlanta, you know, is sort of a cohesive project, and this whole project of densifying the city and providing new opportunities for people to find ways to live and to work and to be here and to find the amenities they're looking for without having to drive to them or drive far. And you know, certainly the Beltline. Yeah. I mean, it's all sort of part of, you know, I know AJ, our president, was kind of instrumental in the study process of Pond City Market. And, you know, even though it's outside of downtown, you know, we've certainly backed these things as important things for the in-town community, even if they're not in the radius that we typically work. And, of course, we would be remiss to say we're extremely happy to have Paces Property as a part of CAP now. And
in downtown Atlanta and Inman Park are shockingly close.
Yeah,
because Inman Park is the first suburb.
I mean, yeah,
most
the original.
They think of Inman Park, they think of downtown. two different planets sometimes. But, I mean, truly, they are
like a half a mile.
I mean, it's
away.
Like a half a mile.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you go to downtown, you take one route, and you get in the park, you take another route.
Right.
And therefore, they're different planets.
Yeah.
But the streetcar,
I walk
it.
I walk it. I bike it. Marta, I get in the park all sorts of ways, and yeah, it's super close.
Well, it's phenomenally close.
And as you said, Dan, I mean, I think
we're huge fans of downtown and CFP, by the way. Downtown is really coming. I mean,
it's
I
a love fest.
Grew
in
up
here.
It is. Let's just hug.
And it's just it's, yeah. Let's give a shout out to Restoration Hardware while we're at it.
Yeah. Well, I think as you said, Dan. To wrap it up because we are just about out of time. But I think the more there is in the general in-town area, whether it's Inman Park, Midtown,
sure.
Downtown, the more people are coming in, the more they're experiencing how much better and safer and more great stuff there is, the more people will want to work here, live here, et cetera. So you can't beat it.
If people want to mistake Croc Street for downtown, that's fine.
You're okay with that. all right. Well, that is about all we
Croc
have
Street
time
Market.
For.
Croc Street Market.
Croc Street Market.
Croc Street Market. It's subliminal message.
It's no longer going to be that place where Rathman's is, hopefully. I mean,
right.
I love Kevin and I love his restaurant, but hopefully we're going to make a place.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Croc Street Market and the Stoveworks is, hopefully we'll stand on their own.
We
believe they will. We think it's going to be a great project. We're very excited about it and happy to be investing in Inman Park and hopefully downtown soon.
Well, we are looking forward to watching it rise and open and taste all the great food. So I want to thank Paces Properties, David Cochran, and Merritt Lancaster for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Always, we love to have Dan Williams with us. No car, no cell phone, Dan.
And thank you for giving me an opportunity.
But he's on Facebook.
Really,
off the
really
grid.
Gripe about Restoration Artwork. That felt good.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime. If you want to gripe, anytime you come back and join us. We love that.
I'll have somebody else tomorrow, trust me.
We love that. So also, of course, we want to thank our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. Stay tuned for more shows here on Business Radio X.